podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run.
Hey, this is Chris. I'm going to try and do my show intro on the trail here because I'm going to be on the road today and don't think I'll have time for it. Probably be kind of strange in the airplane, although I'll bring my recorder with me. Squeeze in a quick 10K before work, before I go to the airport in the morning here, letting the dog go for a swim. Pond's really beautiful. Leaves are starting to turn. Swamp maple's starting to turn red. Pretty soon it'll be all red and orange. Yeah, you're kind of immune to it if you live up here, but it sure is pretty. And they'll all fall, and then we'll spend 2 or 3 days raking them up and hauling them away. And then the ice will be on the pond. Dog doesn't go anywhere near the ice. He doesn't trust the ice at all. Smart dog. So anyhow, had a tough week last week. Travel. I was fighting some sort of virus or something. I don't know. I just felt funky all week with a sort of a low-grade fever headache. Had a cold sore. And maybe just stress, maybe overtraining. I don't know. But gave myself some runner's knee doing all those. I think I did three hard workouts within 24 hours last week, midweek, I think. And it was on the road or on the treadmill. I think that did some damage. But should be all better. Not a big deal. And then I ran for 2 hours on Sunday. I didn't go Saturday. I got half my honey-do list done in the morning, sat down on the couch, and that was it. I was out like a light. I was down for 3 hours and didn't feel like doing anything after that. I figured I needed the rest instead of the run. So that's the way it is. You got to listen to your body. Look at that dog. He's just swimming around the pond. He's going to have to be in his cage all day with that wet fur. I got to run a race this weekend, and then another week I'm going to go run my 50-miler, but I got roped into doing the first leg of a 64-mile relay race around Winnipesaukee, and I run this usually, you know, I've done this like 5 or 6 times. I've never run this first leg before, but I should be able to get back here by lunch, so I'll just go up, run the leg, and get out of there, because I got things to do, you know? I got things to do, man. It's only 10 and a half miles, but it's uphill, and it's road, so I got to be careful I don't do something to myself, since I'm supposed to be in my taper. And what else? Yeah, so on Sunday I went out and ran 2 hours with a dog in the woods in the rain. You go on the website, you see a picture of me and the dog. You can tell me which one's furrier. Ran with my buddy Devin, and he was running really fast. He was feeling young, and I was wearing a pair of shoes that was 2 generations ago because I was poor and ran. I didn't want to wreck my good trail shoes, so I took out an old pair of Asics from 2 or 3 generations ago and ran in those. I think that doesn't help for the old runner's knee. Putting a lot of miles in my shoes. It's because I'm cheap. I got kids in school. So anyhow, today I'm talking with Abel, and Abel works on the Paramount lot in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. And look, there's fish jumping. And we're going to talk about green running. I met Abel online, one of those people you run into on the internet, and we got some interesting ideas, interesting thing, and hope you enjoy the show. See ya.
And now for the equipment check.
Hey folks, it's Chris. Beautiful New England morning here in September. Sun's just coming up. I'm sneaking out a run today. Gotta get down to the airport. It'll take me, I don't know, I'm gonna give myself 3 hours to get into Logan from my house, even though it's only like 40 miles or less, because bus and traffic's nuts this time of day. But that's beautiful. The sun's just coming up. It's nice and cool. Maybe 60 degrees, a little bit less. That's 37 kilograms. In metric, and sitting there on my stream where the Boy Scout bridge is. Boy Scouts built a bridge over the stream. Before they built the bridge, the only way to get over the stream was skipping rocks or climbing across a fallen log. But I got some other streams that are smaller than this one on my course, and let's talk a little bit about civil engineering. I'll give you my civil engineering tip, because I have constructed bridges. over these streams in my spare time because I run here every day. And what you do is you take a good-sized log. I like white pine because it's nice and light, but I don't know what kind of trees grow in your neck of the woods. Take a nice-sized fallen log, maybe 12 inches in diameter, 14, something like that. Again, that's like 14 kilometers in metric. And you get yourself an axe, a maul, a sledgehammer, and a handful of wedges, metal wedges. This is what we do up here in New England because we have a lot of trees. And you chainsaw, and you cut a piece that's long enough to span the river, and you drive you split it lengthwise. So you get two semicircular halves with a flat bit in the middle, right, along the diameter of the log. And you take that and you take another piece of log and you lay it on the ground and you cut a notch in it with your axe or your machete. And you lay the semicircular half bit into the notch and voila, in about 40 minutes you can have yourself a bridge with a nice flat surface. Because when it gets icy, it's hard to cross the round logs and with the bark and everything. So you get the flat bit. If you want, you can peg it so it doesn't move. But, here our streams in August, they're pretty much dried up. In April and May, we have the melt, so they get really, really wide. And, I don't mind running in the stream, but wrecks your shoes after a while to be running in wet shoes all the time. So I built these bridges probably 6 years ago. They're still there. I mean, every once in a while, they get washed away in the spring, and I'll have to drag them back. But they're still there, and they're going to go one of these days. It's either going to go or me or my neighbor, who are both big guys who walk the trails. But there you go. There's my civil engineering tip for the day. Hey, so today I got to get into the airport. Oh, we'll see you out there.
And now for our featured interview.
Hey, you're there.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great. Just sitting on my front porch. Listening to the nice cool autumn night out here in New England, and you are from 2,000 miles away in Los Angeles.
On the other coast, I'm in a nice park on the Paramount lot in Los Angeles, and
so
mid afternoon here.
Yeah, exactly, and another perfect cloudless day in Los Angeles, no doubt.
Oh yeah, cloudless
down there in Hollywood. So what are you doing? You writing for a show right now?
I'm not. I'm an assistant to a couple executive producers who are writing for a show. I guess I'll do a shameless pitch right here. It's called Worst Week. It'll be on CBS coming up, I think, starting next week. I should probably know that. But it's funny.
What's it called? Wish List?
It's called Worst Week, yeah.
Worst Week, okay. We'll keep our heads up. See, now, where you live, meeting people who work in on TV and the movies is like falling off a log, right? We don't have any of those people out here in New England, so it's a treat for me to talk to one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of odd how quickly you get used to it. There's one of those uhs you can edit out later, I guess. It's something that I was doing when I started in college. You know, I went into cinema school and then pretty quickly got a internship on the show Scrubs and grew up there practically. I was there for like 5 seasons. And then from there I've just been jumping around to a couple different projects and latched on to a couple other guys who are working there. And that's what brings me here now to being an assistant, which I guess is a good spot to be when you're young. So,
yeah. You have to rub elbows with the rich and famous.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't watch a lot of Scrubs when it came out, but now I'm catching in the reruns because my kids love it, and the writing is fantastic.
Oh yeah, it's very funny. It's got it moves fast and it plays practically every 15 minutes. They start a new episode somewhere, I think. So they're really doing well right now.
Yeah. So what does this have to do with running? People may ask.
you know what? Not much. I mean, if there's ever a work environment that is not conducive to running, it's probably television, because most people, when they're working, be it, in the writers or on production, in the production office, in editorial, the post-production, everyone's putting in long hours, 12, 14, even 16-hour days. I think mine are right now centered at 10, so I'm very fortunate, but it's very, very much like a inconsistent schedules. You know, you'll go for months at a time, just working all the time, and the only time you get off is just you're sleeping, you're eating miserably, you get sick all the time, and then you just have months in between seasons where you're just having an extended vacation, like you're still in, you know, school or something. So I guess as far as running is concerned, it's really a struggle to get, you know, to get that time where you get to exercise and get to go out and plus, I mean, LA itself is not a very, you know, there's a lot going on here, a lot of culture, a lot of people, but it's not a green environment per se. You know, the park,
right,
I think, is maxes out at like 4%, and most of that's Griffith Park, which is a giant nature reserve, so it's a big forest, which is fun, but, you know, you don't have your inner city, you know, green areas, so generally when you're running on the street, or you have to drive an extended distance to get somewhere to run, so it's not really like the good, relaxing experience that I like running to be a lot of times, so.
Yeah, I was, I used to have an office out there a long time ago, and the air has gotten a lot better. I actually used to have an office in Torrance a long time ago.
Oh, yeah?
And
when
I used to run out there, I used to remember it would be like, you get back, you feel like you smoked a pack of cigarettes.
Oh, definitely. It's like it's not even good for you.
Right. And the other thing was there was a stoplight every quarter mile.
Right.
Across the road, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the other thing about California is everybody's so body conscious out there. I would imagine, you know, people are really health conscious.
That's true. But, you know, a lot of that comes in, you know, a lot of fitness centers, health clubs, other activities. You know, like going to the beach is always a blast. If you go to Venice Beach, there's some good trails all along Santa Monica and going up the coast there. Into Malibu, you know, there are a lot of mountains you can run on. But generally it's just getting to those areas that can be the biggest challenge of all. It's almost like an activity you have to plan out outside of your regular schedule, you know? But yeah, body consciousness is a big thing, but I don't know, I feel like it just adds another element of stress that running for me has always been more of a sense of unwinding and releasing and feeling better about yourself instead of like worrying about looking in the mirror what you weigh or something like that. So it is a different perspective, but you know, there's also a strong running community. You know, if you're going to your Saturday morning 5Ks or I know they have like the LA Road Runners, their LA Marathon have, you know, lots of great clubs. Really,
yeah,
for life, it's really huge.
Down by San Diego, there's a lot of really earthy, country, health-conscious people there.
Yeah.
So we got to rewind a little bit. You and I got connected because I had written a blog post, sort of offhanded blog post about running being green. And, you know, the sentiment of runners is they're all very health-conscious, very environmentally friendly and everything. But if you think about some of the things we do, like all the, you know, the running shoes and driving the races and all this stuff, we actually chew up a lot of carbon to do our sport, even though we're all green. And you had come back to me and said, hey, this is a... So anyhow, active.com picked that up one week and posted it on the front page of their running section. And I guess you stumbled across it there and sent me an email and said, hey, this is a great idea. We should start a green running worldwide club. And, you know, I think the running community would be perfect for that. Because
absolutely. Yeah, when I read that article, I mean, it really hit a nerve because it was something that had crossed through my mind a couple times. And like I wrote you in the email, my story is that when I first started considering how not all running activities are always that environmentally friendly was when I was running a race and at a water stop held onto a paper cup of water and just, you know, was waiting to drink it as I was getting into good position and then realized I was a good 30, 40 meters beyond where the last trash can was and there weren't any more paper cups on the ground. It didn't seem like all that acceptable. Like if I dropped it, I might be littering. I was like, so what do I do at this point? And then I started thinking about like, wow, every weekend there are literally hundreds of thousands of cups across the streets of America, you know, that are being tossed out. And then at the end of the races, you have even more and water bottles and, you know, flyers and all those things. And if you talk to any runner, I mean, they generally seem to have a deep appreciation for the environment and the sort of natural areas that have always been conserved for us. And I know that a lot of them also are involved in different sorts of recreational and ecological preservation communities, you know, but there isn't one that connects those two. You know, like, I'm a member of Surf Rider, too, out here. You know, it's a huge thing. It started in Malibu where back in the 80s, like 1984, 1985, some environmentally conscious surfers realized how dirty the waters were and wanted to make a difference about that, and so started, you know, basically a huge nonprofit lobbying group that goes out and, you know, does beach cleanup and just spreads awareness about, you know, like, the, you know, they found recently a community of softshell, you know, green turtles swimming out in the ocean up here in L.A. that they want to make sure everyone knew about and were protecting. And it just seems like runners, you know, already being very motivated, very conscientious people, could have a similar sort of community that would not only support us and the environment, you know, that we are using and appreciating on a daily basis, but, you know, maybe even be able to make strides towards, you know, more environmentally conscious actions in running. Like, I know New Balance and Nike are doing a lot of research into how they can reuse different types of rubbers or materials that can, over time, decompose
yeah.
to, you know, in landfills instead of just being like the plastics that accumulate over time, or using them in tracks or things like that, or using old car tires for treads on shoes. I think it would be cool if that sort of technology and research had a larger, you know, just a popular backing and more people saying, like, hey, this is something we care about, this is something we could be doing. And in exchange, you know, the organization could also provide a sense of community for those people involved in it and have fun activities and things, you know, that would be going on.
Well, I'll tell you one thing where you're spot on is the community, because running, you know, with this podcasting thing, I've started to realize that the running community, inner New England, the running community has always been very, very strong, right, with the Boston Marathon and...
Oh, that's,
you know,
right, yeah.
It's always been huge here, but now that I'm sort of on the internet, I realize that it's worldwide as well. I mean, we have people from the UK, we have people from all over the world that are part of this sort of, like, virtual community.
And right.
It's pretty cool, because they all have something in common, even though they're, like, totally different, disparate cultures and people. And it's the running that ties everybody together. And I think there's also that sort of green thing that ties it all together as well. So I think that you're spot on with the community, and I think you mm-hmm. could definitely wrap something around that sense of community.
And one thing you brought up in your article that made me stop and think twice was the carbon footprint aspect of it. You know, like, how much of a carbon footprint am I personally producing just by my running activities? You know, like, all the other things that I try to do in life, you know, to be environmentally friendly, like bringing my own cup to work so I don't have to keep throwing out cups or something like that, or, you know, using a reusable water bottle instead of plastic ones. But then when I go out and run, it seems like a lot of that goes out the window for me. You know, I'm using, like, I'm driving to a lot of races. I'm flying to a ton of races now. And it's just like, what sort of actions can I be taking personally to at least create a clean slate, you know, to reduce my carbon footprint?
Right.
And
right.
So that
you know,
I thought was really important, a good thought.
You know, after talking to you, I was thinking about it, too. And I was thinking, you know, every marathon I go to hands you a plastic bag full of paper.
Right.
Which you then throw out, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, there's maybe a single-use package of sunscreen in there that you might keep, but everything else pretty much toss, right?
Yeah, and that single-use thing of sunscreen, once you use it at one time, then you got another piece of plastic to toss out, too.
Right, and you figure there's about somewhere between, I think we're up to about 750,000 people finish a marathon just in the U.S.
Oh, wow.
A year now. So think about 750,000 of those plastic bags full of paper, right?
That's right.
And then all the goos and the plastic water bottles and the cups and stuff, we're definitely generating a mound of crap.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you say that there's so many people running the marathon. I think initially, wow, that's great. You know, it is a huge accomplishment, and it means that there's so many people making a commitment to living healthier, at least, and experiencing something that, you know, not very long ago people thought was absolutely impossible, and now they're starting to realize anyone can accomplish this if they put their mind to it. And but the flip side of that is that, you know, as much as we're making the commitment to live longer, we're also having some sort of effect on possibly creating a world that isn't that enjoyable to live in later in life, right? Unless we start making some sort of difference to back up. And I mean, we were talking earlier. We saw that you know, Runner's World Green Team thing. So I know that they're trying to make races. They're giving them sort of guidelines that they can follow to be on the right track. But yeah, it would be great if it was a community of actual runners instead of a corporate thing.
Yeah, and Runner's World, you know, love them or hate them, they're sort of the commercial behemoth in our sport.
Right.
But Rodel, who owns Runner's World, was originally founded on essentially a green premise. Things like organic gardening and healthy living, those were all Rodel products.
Oh, that's cool.
And the grandfather, Mr., you know, the original Rodel, he built that publishing empire basically based on, you know, back to the land kind of stuff in the 60s and 70s. And he asked me why I know this, because Maria Rodel, the current chairman of the board, graduated from high school with me in my high school class.
Do you still keep in touch with her?
Yeah, I do. You know, I tried to push my book to her at Runner's World, but I got denied.
Hmm. A lot going on.
Yeah, I can't claim to have a close relationship, though, but yeah, I do know Maria and some of the other guys over there. They definitely, but you know, that's the good news, right? As tied in and as commercial as they are, they also have that sort of underlying make the world a better place thing. So if it was some sort of community upwelling, they'd jump right on it, because that's basically their modus operandi, is to see where, you know, which way the wind's blowing and then jump on it, right?
That's true. And plus, I mean, they're in a really good position to quickly make an impact, since they have that sort of corporate financial machine behind them. You know,
right.
that a grassroots movement would have to take time to kind of build up that speed to get what they can kind of do initially.
Right. And I bet some of the big shoe companies would jump on it as well.
Oh, yeah. So I guess the next step is just kind of figuring out what the first step is, you know, after the dialogue of it. So, as I told you in our emails, like, I'm starting research. I feel like, you know, this is something I'm very aware of, you know, and that I'm concerned about, but it's not necessarily something that I feel like I'm very qualified to talk on at the moment, you know, like,
right.
There's definitely room to grow and room to learn for me personally, and I think a big first step of that would be making a personal commitment to trying to run greener.
Well, I interact with a lot of race directors, and I think I can start, you know, just on a personal level, if all of us as runners, anytime we interact with a race director or an organization or an event, say, hey, think about these 12 things, you know, and just sort of forward it around, I think that would be a good thing. I didn't look at the green team, you know, list of rules, but that's probably a good starting point for some sort of, you know, green racing charter.
Yeah, that's true, just to kind of get a direction of, like, I'm sure they've had some specialists analyze it in some respect.
Yeah, I know the longer trail races now, they won't let you bring individual goo, you know, hammer gel or goo or any of the individually wrapped stuff on the course anymore.
Oh, really? Because it's just so long that they don't want it dropped in the middle of anywhere?
Yeah, because people say they will pack it up, but they don't. They drop it, right?
Oh, yeah. I've seen them on the ground all over the place.
Right, so they make them use bottles now instead, reusable bottles. So there's something.
That's a step forward, yeah. And, yeah, I know it's kind of a ridiculous call to ask people to bring their own water bottles on, like, a 5K or a 10K, because no one wants to be carrying that around, you know, when they're trying to push themselves, you know, as opposed to using the water stations. But,
right.
I mean, I was thinking maybe there's some way, you know, maybe a race company could provide reusable cups, if that sounds completely ridiculous, that people just made the commitment not to toss them under people's feet, you know, just like some sort of plastic that could be put into a giant bin and steam cleaned, you know, instantaneously and reused the next week.
Yeah.
that just might be more effort than it's worth. I don't know.
Well, you know, the other thing that that the running community has in common, which I think would help a lot of these, is you know, if you just state the problem, right? The problem is we got a whole bunch of water bottles we're throwing away, a whole bunch of cups. You know, this delivery system is basically a bad delivery system.
Right.
Our community is full of engineers, just by the nature of running. The kids that got beat up by the football players, you know, they became runners.
Right, they were running away from those football players.
Right, so I think if we just give press to that, I think you'd find some unique solutions in that regard.
Definitely. I think a good testament to that is just looking at the different sorts of, you know, the different sorts of, like, aqua belts and things that have already been made to be ergonomically correct and fit around the hand or, you know, be able to cut through wind or whatever. I think there's definitely just a solution out there, you know. It's just a matter of getting people to think about it.
Right. So what you need is an organizational charter.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? With some goals and something like that, right?
So I think I can definitely start on that and you know, pass it by you and find some other professionals on the intellectual on the topic.
You can elect yourself president, give yourself a salary.
Okay. It's going to be a big one. I don't know if I'll be able to afford paying myself, but maybe down the line. I think I'd also like to look into and contact some people I know at Surfrider and see, you know, what they'd suggest as far as, you know, what sort of policies they have that we could apply to running and to...
Yeah, yep. And the other thing is I know the owner of Active Sports, and he's out of San Diego. He's out of San Diego, so he'd be all over this.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, so. I'd love to speak with him and anyone else. The more people, the better.
Cool. And I got a great idea for a movie. It's about this guy, Chris, who runs.
you know what? Send it to my office, and we'll... we'll write a treatment or something. See if we can get an option.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to start interviewing starlets.
Okay, that's good. Like, we can run them through the casting couch, right?
And some poodles for my dog Buddy.
We'll see what we can do. We'll have your people talk to my people instead of a lunch.
That's so funny. I was watching Entourage last night on HBO. It's gonna be
really? It was a season premiere, right?
I don't know. I've never watched it before. I just started watching it this last couple of weeks. It's so funny.
Yeah, it definitely makes everything seem very glamorous. I wish I could say my life was like that, but no, mine's very mundane.
But you're getting your runs in.
What's that?
I said you're getting your runs in?
I'm getting my runs in, which is, you know, that's what's most important to me right now.
Right. So what kind of races do you run? What's your distance?
My new distance is marathons. It's what I've kind of gotten addicted to. I ran New York last year, and it was a blast. It was so much fun because my dad had run it a couple of years, and he had asked me, you know, if I wanted to do it with him, and I finally said yes after many, many no's. And then he ended up not getting into the raffle, and I did, but he wouldn't let me drop out just because he wasn't in. So we still went out together, and he just cheered me on. And then this year we both got in, so we're going back, but I've been training really intensely. In fact, last weekend I did a practice run for it. I went up to Big Bear for their first marathon, and let me tell you, that was a tough one. It was like at 7,000 feet around Big Bear Lake, up and down, just rolling hills the entire way.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, the fastest time was a 2:48, I managed 3:16, and I felt like dying. It was the most excruciating experience of my life, but I placed 7th and 1st in my age group, so I think I won a gift certificate, so I'm pretty excited about that.
That's a great time on that course.
That's what I was thinking.
You should be able to qualify at New York.
I hope so.
There's only one hill in the New York Marathon, and it's a bridge.
Yeah. As long as I can get past that and keep up that same rate, I think, I might be able to run Boston in April, which that'd be the goal.
Yeah, it's my hometown race. We can hook up.
All right. Yeah, that's what I got my sights on.
So what do you need? You're a youngster, right? You need a 3:10?
A 3:10. And so right now I'm sitting at a 3:16, but I still got 2 months. and I'm feeling pretty strong, so I'm just going to, you know, stay resolute and start, I guess, watching my diet and not push myself too hard and not hurt myself and, you know, see what comes of it. But, that'd definitely be the goal. I'm also running Rome in March.
Rome as in Rome, Italy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm really looking forward to that one. It goes around the Colosseum, I've never been there, but I better start brushing up on my Italian.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm thinking about running Indianapolis in November. Because I got two sisters that live out in Indianapolis, so.
Oh, cool.
And so, because I'm doing an ultra in 2 weeks. I'm doing a 50-mile trail race up in Vermont. So I figured I got enough juice in me to do some marathons after that.
And so when you're training for ultras, that means you're running practically a marathon every weekend, right? Like, as far as your training's concerned.
Yeah, more than a marathon every weekend, but it's different. It's very low intensity.
Uh-huh.
It's all in trails, and it's all really slow.
Okay.
So it's actually much less difficult.
But the time is increased drastically, right?
Right. So my longest run was 6 hours. I ran 36 miles in 6 hours.
Oh, boy. That's amazing.
Yeah, which isn't, you know, it's a 10-minute mile, right? When I was your age and qualifying for Boston, that's a 7, you know, that's a 7:10 or a 7:11 pace. There's a big difference between a 7:10 pace and a 10-minute pace, you know?
That's true.
So it's good. You walk a lot. It's kind of cool. I like it.
I would love to try an ultra someday. It's just so much work for me to get up to being committed enough to conquer a marathon, you know, and now it's like, it's all I want to do is qualify for Boston, so I'm very focused right now, but I figure, like, it would just be such a challenge to do an ultra. It's either something that would break me or make me, you know?
Hey, that's cool. That's it. That's 21 minutes or so, 22, 23.
Okay.
I don't know, I didn't start my watch on time, which is usually what I do in races, too. I'll get 5 minutes in to look at my watch and go, oh, crap.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it. I said, I've never done a podcast. It's a lot like talking on the phone, and that's fun.
Yeah. So when you come up with your charter statement for this organization, let's work together. We can get it going. I mean, I don't want to lead it, but I'll certainly help you get it going.
I would really appreciate that. Yeah, I would need all the help I can get, but it's something that I feel like I definitely could sink my teeth into, and find some other people who are hopefully as motivated as me.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. I'm going to let
you
go. And I'm on the road this week. I'm flying up to Denver tomorrow morning.
Great.
I'll put this together some point over the next 2-3 days.
Okay.
It's a busy week for me. All right. Thanks for your time, man.
Yeah, thank you. And get some good elevation training up there. Right?
Yeah. All right. We'll see ya.
Take care, Chris.
Yep, bye.
Bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
Hey, folks, this is Chris. Sorry about the noise. I'm on my way to the airport. I got a lot of time this week, so this is probably the only podcast I put out. But, you know, as far as a tip for this week, I know everybody's getting, all you marathon runners are getting close to your fall race, and you're getting all serious about it. I saw a bunch of you guys out there this weekend. You know, I could tell they got that long-distance stride going, and they got they're hung head-to-toe with goo packets and water bottles and all sorts of devices, and they got that sort of serious, grim look on their face out running around up by my house. Never seen them before, so they're probably, you know, somewhere in the middle of a 20-miler. So, you know, here's some advice for you. First of all, get your foot care done early. So, you don't want to be cutting your toenails the night before the race because you might cut one too short or do something wrong, end up creating more problems than it's worth. So, if you got foot care to do, do it 5 days before the race. Do it the weekend before the race. So, any mistakes you make can grow back. And whatever you do, the day before, the 2 days before, the week before, stay away from doing stupid stuff. You know, if your significant other wants you to help them move a couch, just say no. Or I'll give you a story. I had one year. I was doing real great. I set all my set a bunch of PRs that year at some long distances at 20 mile and such. And it was Saturday. Patriots Day weekend, 2 days before the Boston Marathon, and I was in great shape, and I said, you know, it's a beautiful day, I'm going to rake the lawn. And it's not that I wasn't in good enough shape to rake the lawn and run a marathon, but what happened was just the act of raking did something to my lower back muscles, and I ended up having back spasms late in the race, and that, you know, I still did well, but it definitely made a difference. My back just tightened up on me. It was from raking, right? Just because I couldn't resist a beautiful day and my type A personality. So whatever you do, sit in the lawn chair, do your taper. Don't go out for a six-mile run the Friday before a marathon because you're worried whether you've got enough miles in or not. That last week, you've done all the training you're going to do. It's not going to help you. If you got 2 weeks left and you're worried about some hills, you can throw in one hill repeat like I talked about last week. You know, throw in some hill repeats because that's strength work. That won't kill you. You'll recover from that. But six, 7 days before the race, just stay off it, man. Do easy stuff. If you really feel nervous, you can go out the Friday before and do a, you know, do a 2 to 4 miler and come in strong. You know, let yourself come in hard. But my taper was always at least a 2 week taper, and that last week I do nothing more than a 10K, but and I'd still keep my speed and my tempo up, but just at lower number of reps, lower distance, same intensity, lower reps, lower distance. You're definitely not going to get caught up though the week before a marathon, so don't even think about it. More is not better. The other thing is that, you know, what I'd do is I'd stop running. I'd basically do, if I had a marathon on Monday or a marathon on Sunday, I would do an easy 2 miles on Friday, take Saturday totally off. Go for a walk on Saturday because typically you're all keyed up. A lot of times people tell you to drink Gatorade and eat stuff all day Saturday. For me, my nutrition, I found it the best thing to do was just not eat any solid food after about 3 o'clock the night before the marathon. Just get it out of your system. You know, you don't need it. And that stuffing yourself with spaghetti the night before a marathon is a great plan if you want to spend the first 5 miles in the porta potty, but just don't do it. You know, just and then when you wake up in the morning, you know, take some Gatorade or whatever your favorite sports drink is, and about an hour and a half before the race, eat a power bar. Right before the race starts, shoot a goo, and you know, 30 minutes. Try to get in line at the porta potty. A half hour, you want to get in line a half hour before gun, because even if you don't have to go, that'll put you in the porta potty 10 to 15 minutes before the gun, so by that time you may have to go. You know, when you start in the race this time of year, we can have some cool mornings. The big black trash bag with the armholes looks stupid, but it's a great tip because you can keep your body heat. You don't want to overdress. You know, you don't want to dress for the morning temperature. You want to dress for what it's going to be out on the 20-mile mark. So you want to dress a little cool. You want to underdress. And that black plastic trash bag you can tear off and throw away after a mile. No muss, no fuss. So, you know, you can bring a throwaway sweatshirt. You know, you get lots of old sweatshirts or old race tees, and you can just toss those at the first water stop. People will collect them. I work water stops. We collect them. We might even wear them if we like the shirt. We give them to the Goodwill, so don't worry about littering. So, hey, good luck in your marathons, and I'll see you out there, man. Hey, so nobody took advantage of my offer to send you the 26.2 keychain from the Boston Marathon last year. You know, it's me and some of the crotchety old-timers were sitting around thinking about this 26.2 phenomenon. You know, you see the bumper stickers all the time. We thought that was kind of stupid. But, you know, to each zone. We figured we'd come up with some other stickers that would be like 0.7 or, you know, 0.2 or whatever, you know, just something ironical. But so nobody called into the listener comment line that you can find on my website at runrunlive.com. So I'm going to send it out to Abel because he's a good guy. And not only that, I'm going to send him a copy of my book. I'm going to write some up. Hopefully he'll be inspired to get his Boston qualifier in the next couple of weeks. And so good for him. So this week, if you want to send me an email or send me a listener comment on my listener comment line, which you can find at runrunlive.com, or send it to Chris Runner at runrunlive.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter. You can send me a tweet at CYKTRussell. And also, same thing for the Flickr. I got some pictures out there on Flickr at CYKTRussell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, two S's, two L's. And so this week, first person to send me something, I'm going to send you an autographed race T-shirt from one of my random, slightly used race T-shirts from my running shrine in the laundry room. And I'll pick you a good one, you know? I'll pick you a good one. So first one, we'll get one of my random long-sleeve cotton race T-shirts, and we'll have the whole crew sign it for you in indelible ink, the whole production crew, and we'll send that off to you. I will ship internationally. I know how to do it. I'm an eBayer from way back. So hey, the challenge is on, man. Let's hear from you. So that's it. Episode 26 in the can. I'm still in the mobile recording studio here. I'm sitting in traffic at the Rotary in Concord, Massachusetts, the birth of democracy in the modern world. Hear the shot heard around the world, the end of colonialism in North America and the beginning of the Pax Americana, and now a 20-minute traffic jam at a Rotary next to a really gnarly federal penitentiary. So, yeah, I'm sitting right next to the prison farm. Kind of interesting. So that's it, man. Episode 26. I wish everybody luck in their fall races. I know we got a lot of fall races coming up. Everybody be cool. Finish up your training. Focus. Don't get too stressed out. I know it's a stressful time of year. Just got to relax. Take a deep breath. You're doing better than all the people who didn't wake up this morning. So just learn to celebrate. Hey, we'll see you out there, man.
Thanks for listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.